Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. I think we were working on a verse of the day, which was 1 John chapter 3, verse 7, 8, 9, and 10. I think I'm actually going to read that again. Dear children, do not let anyone lead you astray. The one who does what is right is righteous, just as he is righteous. The one who does what is sinful is of the devil, because the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the devil's work. No one who is born of God will continue to sin because God's seed remains in them. They cannot go on sinning because they have been born of God. This is how we know who the children of God are and who the children of the devil are. Anyone who does not do what is right is not God's child, nor is anyone who does not love their brother and sister. So let's do what is right. Let's serve our master and king. And let's share God's love as we go out throughout the day, because that's how we show the love of Jesus to a lost world, because there is a lot of problems and hatred in the world, and even more than ever right now with all that's going on with the racial tension and all the issues that are going on in Charlottesville. We're going to continue that conversation a little bit today. It's coming up in the second part of this hour. Dr. Carol Swain is going to be with us. She's a commentator, a former professor at Princeton, and she's going to weigh in on the subject. She is just saw her on Fox News the other night, and I also watched her PragerU video, which came out a couple weeks ago, which has already had over 4.5 million views. So she's going to be my guest second part of the hour. Up next, though, is Drew Trotter. He is going to come on the program in just a minute. He is the director and consortium of Christian Study Centers. Who knows what that is, but we're going to find out in just a minute. Be back. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Well, good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Glad you're with us today. Bill Arnold here. I've got Drew Trotter on the studio line. He's the executive director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers. Drew, good morning.
Morning, Bill.
What is a study center, and is there pizza there?
The answer to the second question is yes.
Oh, good. And then I'm interested.
The answer to the first question is, takes many, many forms, but essentially study centers, Christian study centers, are places of thoughtful reflection on the Christian faith and what its implications are for people's lives as they study to figure out what it is God has called them to do in the workplace and in the world generally. And these exist at secular universities and colleges to help Christians navigate the waters of these 4 years of study from a Christian perspective. And not just from any old perspective or no perspective at all. But they take a lot of different forms. And they're not just for undergraduates. I just mentioned navigate the waters of 4 years. You have graduate students that are involved. You have faculty that are involved, really searching to think about what it means to be a Christian in this society today.
I love it. Now, Drew, see if I get this right. These study centers that help people think about their Christian faith and process their Christian life are on secular campuses as well as other places of higher education. Do I have that right?
No, period.
Oh.
We are intended to be on secular universities and college campuses. We look at Christian colleges as study centers already.
Okay.
I mean, they're supposed to be doing what they do within a Christian framework.
Okay.
But a secular university is not. So there's a wonderful study center called the Anselm House at the University of Minnesota, right there in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about the size and are they how are they funded? And I mean, I'm fascinated by this.
Yeah, those are great questions. And they're complex, unfortunately, for radio. But the first question is the size, and they go all over the map.
Okay.
From a woman who does, who works with about 5 or 6 or 10 undergraduates at Hampton-Sydney College every year, going to class with them and then going and discussing what they've learned in class afterwards. She's theologically trained. She has no building, no assistant, virtually no budget, although she's trying to find money in places. Study centers are notoriously bad for their fundraising, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
They go all the way from there to the one, say, at the University of Virginia that's got 8 full-time staff with about 15 or 20 interns as well that are paid, who are doing work in all different kinds of areas with all different sorts of groups, from law students to faculty to business administration students and undergrads of all kinds, and really, really a force in the life of that university. And they, like I said, go all over the map, from Yale to the University of Texas to UCal Berkeley to Arizona State, all over the country. And it's a very exciting work. And I've completely forgotten what your second question. Oh, how are they funded? That's a great question, because they've started in very different ways. I referred to the one at the University of Virginia, where I was for 20-something years as one of the staff there. They actually started very slowly as a campus ministry and were very much oriented towards the notion of thinking about the truth and trying to understand how the Christian faith is true within the context of this secular education that they were getting. And Francis Schaeffer was a big influence. A place in Vancouver, British Columbia, called Regent College was a big influence. And anyway, over the years, they gathered enough funding and enough development to buy a building and to expand that building, and now they're expanding it again. It's really exciting to see. Others, there has been a very wealthy business person in the area that likes this idea and decides to buy a building and hire their own director and start a Christian study center with a library and with rooms where you can have discussion groups and you can have coffee and you can just take a nap as a student. And we always like to think of study centers as places where they have spaces for useful, thoughtful reflection on the Christian faith, but also to have fun and to eat pizza and
nice.
To, you know, just live.
Right.
And that's important too.
Okay, Drew, I'm like a B-minus C-plus student, so I have to ask this question. What is the difference between a campus ministry and a Christian study center?
No, you're showing you're an A-plus student because you're asking all the right questions. That is a very good good question, but many of the campus ministries are dedicated entirely or strongly to evangelism. Then they develop discipleship modes out of winning people to Christ who never knew Christ. We think much more as of our calling as one of helping Christian students to understand their vocation, to understand their calling from Christ. And that calling exists in 4 ways. To him as an individual for salvation, very important calling, yes. But also we are called by Christ to be a member of a family, a member of the church, and a member of society. And he has designs upon our lives for fulfilling those functions regularly in all that we say and do and think and feel. So we work hard, particularly on the last one. What does it mean for me to be a member of this society in this day at this time? So we have to talk about apologetics, but we also have to talk about the arts. We have to talk about business and what it means to be a Christian businessman or a Christian doctor or lawyer. And that's not simple. And it's really a very helpful step as that person then goes off into the world after 4 years of education and knows what to do with it as a Christian and knows how to fit into a church. So campus ministries, wonderful. A lot of the campus ministries hang out in study centers. Sometimes they have their offices for their staff there. They do different kinds of meetings there, but we're really not that traditional evangelistic ministry.
Well, this is really encouraging. Now, Drew, I'm going to take a little break, and when I come back, I want to ask you about how important it is for college students to start developing a thinking faith. So, they're actually going to be believers with discernment. I want to ask you about that when we come back. It's 15 minutes after the hour. I'm talking to Drew Trotter from the Director Consortium of Christian Study Centers. How cool is that? Be back in a minute. We now join the Early Morning Late Show, already in progress. So, Drew, let me ask you this. Let's talk about the importance of thinking faith. How do we have believers? How do we become believers with discernment?
Well, you couldn't ask a better question, because the Lord himself said that the first commandment was to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And the mind having a place of prominence there, an important part of it. We're supposed to think well about our faith, and the faith should make sense because it reflects reality. It reflects reality better than any faith that there is. Now, every person is a person of faith. Even the most hardened atheist has chosen to believe that that is true, because you can't prove it one way or the other. So what is a thinking Christian to do? Well, a thinking Christian is supposed to really look at the evidence for the faith and understand their faith deeply and profoundly as something that is true, that is worth taking out into a world that's looking for truth. Now, that sounds like apologetics, but here's the rub. What the Lord says is go out into the world and live among people. Sure, you proclaim the name of Christ, and sure, you speak, and you should speak well, and you should have reasonable discussions with your friends about the faith. But regularly, you're supposed to live before the world as Christians in such a way that they're going to go, whoa, who is this person?
Mm.
Now, I think that really happens by people who are unafraid of how their faith fits into the society, because they understand how their faith fits into the society. And they just sit there shoulder to shoulder working on a problem in business or in engineering or in medicine, and somebody discovers along the way that this person is a Christian. And they go, well, Christians aren't like that. Christians are reactionary fundamentalists who all are throwing Jesus at me all day long, or they march in Charlottesville, Virginia on the side of the alt-right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't understand our faith, and they don't understand it because we're not taking it into the world well. So to think well about your faith is to understand how what God has called you to do, which is be this engineer or be this lawyer or be this doctor who performs excellently as unto the Lord, as Colossians and Ephesians tell us quite clearly, when they see that and then begin to inquire and befriend you because you've befriended them, and then the subject comes up, you're unafraid to share your faith because it's everything to you. It has to do with your business. It has to do with your family. It has to do with your most important relationship, which is to your church, other than your relationship to God himself. And people are astounded. They didn't even know that was a Christian.
Drew, this is so much wisdom. I'm taking notes as you're speaking.
Oh, boy, forget that. Talk to somebody else, Bill.
Now, I know that you lived in Charlottesville for almost 20 years, didn't you?
I lived in Charlottesville for 22 years as the head of the Center for Christian Study. I still live there today.
Oh, you do? Awesome.
It's been a sad week for us, been a tough week.
Yeah.
But a good week.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Maybe you can give a couple of firsthand observations about what you're watching and seeing and how you're feeling living there.
Yeah, it's been difficult. I've been on the road for a little bit of the time in the aftermath, particularly of the events of last weekend. But I was glad to see that the church did a solid job of clarifying, first, that what we do is go to the one who can really do something about all this mess, and that's the Lord himself. And so there were prayer meetings all over this city. None of that got on the news media, no surprise. It's not even understood by most people, and it's not a very, it's not a very sexy thing to put on the news that everybody is sitting there praying. But there were lots praying, and then there were numbers of people downtown handing bottles of water to people so that they could not be hurt by the heat and all, and really trying to minister to people in and among the crowds on both sides of this horrible divide. Most of the churches that I know spoke out very strongly and rightly against racism, against anyone who would put one kind of human being over another on the basis of their color or their race, in whatever way that shows up. And I was glad to see that message proclaimed. Another message that was proclaimed strongly is the absolute crucial place that civility and discussion needs to have in our world right now. And we really need to have people telling us we need to have conversations, we need to have discussions. Study Center here, it hadn't even started yet because the students don't come in until next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very, very odd thing. At this time of the year, we're looking forward with hope and excitement to all the new students coming in. The Study Center here in Charlottesville has a big move-in day luncheon that over 400 students and families attend every year. It's phenomenal. All of that was very positive and exciting, and then this thing happens, and it's been a real challenge to us. But the Study Center here released a statement and is clearly going to start discussions on race and on the unity of the human being, because God created us all in his image, no matter who we are. And we need to have respect for each other because of that.
Mm-hmm. So, Drew, would you say overall the body of Christ has responded well in Charlottesville?
As far as I can tell, yes, Bill. I'm just another person who lives in Charlottesville, actually,
yeah,
at this point, because I travel all over the country to these places and all of that. But I was pleased with the response of the church in Charlottesville, yes.
Mm-hmm. Drew, you're an interesting guy. I'd like to have you on the show again. I know for 20 years you've presented a seminar entitled Show and Tell, How to View a Movie Responsibly.
That's helping, exactly right.
Yeah, and that to me is fascinating. So here's your formal invitation to come back on the show. Are you willing to say yes and commit to that right now?
I will say yes in public, right here in public. I love to talk about movies. In fact, you're going to have a real hard time stopping me on that subject.
Okay.
But yes, I'd love to.
But the idea how to view a movie responsibly, I think, is something that I would really love to talk to you about. So I'll get you back on the program soon, and we'll have that discussion. So thank you so much, Drew Trotter. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
That would be fun. Thank you, Bill.
You bet. All right, 25 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break. Coming up in the next half hour, Dr. Carol Swain's going to be with us. We'll be back in just a minute.
It's morning. Your best bet to make it a good one is to listen to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
It's 30 minutes past the hour. After a break for news, we're going to talk to Dr. Carol Swain. Looking forward to that. Definitely want to stay tuned. Be back in a minute. Good morning. 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Ed Welch is a counselor and author. He's written a book called When People Are Big and God Is Small. He says that everyone has moments of looking to others to build up their own self-esteem. He explains why this really can't work.
Here's the challenge for us. Okay, I don't feel good enough about myself, and so I look to other people to make me feel a little bit better, to puff me up, to just say good things, and I find myself resting in that. That's what we can oftentimes think is, well, we have to, instead of trusting in people, we want to trust in God, and God will give us that particular approval. Well, that's all true, but But I think it misses a critical step because usually when I look at my own life and fear of man, and we can talk a little bit about shame too, because I think that's the other side of the fear of man. One side is I think oftentimes a certain sense of pride that can come out in depression and all kinds of other things, but it's a certain pride that says, I want to be somebody. I want to have something that I can rest on in myself so I can be okay. That is really the heart of it. And for us to simply turn to Jesus and say, okay, Jesus, now you make me feel good about myself, and you make me stand out from above the crowd. You make me stand in my own accomplishments. There's something really quite twisted about that.
If you'd like to hear that full interview, go to myfaithradio.com. Type into the search engine Ed Welch, WELCH, or you can also try typing in Break Free from Shame and Regret. Hopefully you'll get yourself there. Next up, Dr. Carol Swain is with us. Very excited to have a conversation with her. Be back in a minute.
Teens live in a culture where personal restraint seems non-existent. In a borderless world, it's our job to show them the value of boundaries. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Boundaries are like our personal space. They define who we are and who we're not. And when teens haven't learned to respect their parents' boundaries, well, they're less likely to know how to set and enforce their own. So if you feel like your teen is crossing the line, don't be afraid to lay down some rules and that you have personal needs too. When you teach your teen the value of respecting boundaries, you'll set them up for a lifetime of healthy relationships with others.
Is your teen bored, lazy, or glued to video games this summer? Get Mark Gregston's list of 6 ways to make the most of summer with your teen. Download your free copy online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
Good morning. It's 23 minutes until the top of the hour. My guest, Dr. Carol Swain, since 1999 has taught political science and law at Vanderbilt University. She just retired. She is a political analyst and commentator. Carol, good morning.
Good morning to you.
You know, I recently saw your PragerU video on the South, which already has over 4.5 million views in a few weeks. And I saw you on Fox News a few mornings ago. So I'd like to start the interview today with kind of a softball question for you being on my show this morning, okay?
All right.
All right. So when I order your dozen roses, do you prefer red or yellow?
My mother loves yellow. I like red.
All right. I'm going to do a dozen of each. How's that?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, you know, as I'm reading your bio, I mean, first of all, I want our listeners to hear a little bit more about your life because it's so unbelievably interesting. You grew up in poverty, living in a shack without running water. You were sharing 2 beds with 11 siblings.
Well, to tell you the truth, in the beginning part of my life, there were probably about the youngest kids. Not the youngest kids, the oldest kids. We were living in a 2-room shack, and then it expanded to the 2 bedrooms.
Okay.
And at that point, it was about 9 of us living in the shack.
Oh boy. And you also, there's 12 kids in your family, and you would not go to school if it snowed because you had no shoes.
Well, we didn't have snowshoes. It got interpreted like that in Wikipedia, but when it snowed, we lived out in the country, and so we basically stayed home until the snow melted.
Oh, sure.
And one year, we missed 80 days of school, and everyone failed.
Wow. Now, to me, I live in Minnesota, so I would miss more than 80 days with the snow that we have here. But I want to talk about Charlottesville and your take on that.
Well, one of the reasons I'm getting a lot of interviews right now is in 2002, I wrote a book called The New White Nationalism in America, Its Challenge to Integration. And at the time, I distinguished between old-style white supremacy and what I called
the new white nationalism. I called it the new white nationalism to distinguish it from neo-Nazis and Klans. And these were white. Some of them had pretty much given up on integration, but they were not espousing hatred or using racial epithets. They were making the argument against racial double standards. They felt whites were being discriminated against. They were using science, social science data, FBI statistics to make an argument that I thought would resonate with a lot of people because they were addressing policy issues that were being ignored by mainstream politicians. In Charlottesville, I think you had many different kinds of people there, and that the attacks on the Southern Monument have unified white people, and that we were seeing people come together to protest. I don't think that they came together to do violence.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think our odds are for having any kind of respectful dialogue going forward?
Well, the odds are not good because with the political left, they don't seem interested in having a conversation. They only seem interested in, you know, preaching what they believe is the proper stance for everyone. They're not listening. I believe that if we're going to get beyond where we are today, we have to listen to the grievances of people who are not espousing hatred, who are not using racial epithets. They're not neo-Nazis. They're not even alt-right or the new white nationalists. They're just everyday men and women who happen to be white who are concerned about the future.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Swin, what do you think are the contributing factors to the deep divisions in our society?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of white people have grievances that are related to how we talk about not just race, but immigration. I believe that they're concerned about demographic changes and that the unemployment, just a lot of uncertainty. We also have, you know, the situation through the university campuses where they really push diversity. They claim to care about inclusion and free speech, but it's not really true. Only one side gets to talk. And I think that as long as that's the case, that we're not having a conversation that includes everyone, then we're going to be pushed further and further apart. I also think that you cannot continue to do identity politics and not expect that white people will not see themselves as white people and want to participate as well. And the problem today is that we have divided our nation to the point that if you're not part of a group, you know, who are advancing an interest, then you feel left out. And I think that white people feel that they have an interest that's being ignored, and that is causing them to begin to behave like other racial and ethnic minority groups. In some parts of the country, they're already a minority. And the way to get beyond this is for us to sort of jettison those identities and move towards the American national identity.
Mm-hmm. Carol, what about the idea of starting to erase symbols from our country if we don't like them? Like statues?
Well,
and
I mean, to me, that's like pouring gasoline on a fire.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the Southern monuments and parts of Southern heritage, I believe it's always a mistake when you try to erase history as opposed to learning from history. And it's also a mistake, too, to judge historical figures by the values that we hold today. If you continue, you know, to apply that standard, 20, 25 years from now, someone may decide that they don't like Dr. Martin Luther King or Rosa Parks or some of the icons of the leftists. Are we going to tear down their monuments as well? It's problematic what's taking place, and I think it's misguided, and that more mainstream Americans need to stand up. It shouldn't be the neo-Nazis and the alt-right who are complaining. It should be every American standing up saying, no, we need to learn from history, not try to revise it or try to erase it.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking this morning about Senator Robert Byrd and all the buildings and streets that have been named after him. And, of course, he was part of the Klan and was actually elevated to a status where he was a recruiter.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably an endless list of people, that men that had clay feet. And I think that we're just making a terrible mistake. In Richmond, I understand they have Monument Drive.
Mm-hmm.
It would be far more constructive to take school children to the monuments and to explain who these individuals were, why the monuments were created for them, and how the choices they made and how we view them today, and use that as a teaching opportunity as opposed to just erasing it and pretending that part of history didn't take place, or if it took place, you know, it was so heinous that we no longer, it's no longer something that we want to remember or try to learn from. That's a terrible mistake.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Swin, what you just said, though, involves common sense.
It's in short supply, and I think the universities have just gone off the cliff when it comes to their responsibilities. The universities are no longer marketplaces of ideas. They teach students what to think and not how to think.
Mm.
And our children are being, quote, educated in safe spaces, and that's impossible. There's no way you can educate someone if you insulate them from opposing views.
Yeah. Dr. Swain, let me take a little break. When I come back, we'll continue our conversation. It is 13 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks for being with us this morning. It's 10 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Carol Swain, recently retired professor of Vanderbilt and a political analyst and commentator. You might have seen her recently on Fox News. She was on talking about her latest book. And Carol, I'm just curious, as you have seen so many changes in society and the trends in education, I'm just curious as how your faith has played a part in all of this.
Well, I had a Christian conversion experience, I guess, about 18, 19 years ago, and that really affected how I see my role in the world. And the newest book is called Abduction, How Liberalism Steals Our Children's Hearts and Minds. And I was very concerned about the fact that Christian children who have been raised in the church and gone to Sunday school, as soon as they start getting into middle school, high school, and by the time they get to college, we lose so many of those children. And in my book, which is co-authored with Steve Feasel, we show just some of the things that are taking place in public and private schools that most parents are not aware of. And we believe that if parents have this information, they can make decisions about whether or not to homeschool, to become more actively involved in public schools, or to protect our kids from organizations like Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, that used to be very different. You know, 20 or 30 years ago, there are alternatives, such as American Heritage Girls and Trail Life USA. So right now, that's, you know, part of my mission is to try to heighten the awareness of Christian parents and churches. I think the churches need to be teaching worldviews along with apologetics in Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
And so that when the kids reach middle school, they know the secular arguments they're going to confront, and they know the biblical worldview.
Mm-hmm. I know you have a huge heart for education, and as you were departing Vanderbilt, you said, I will not miss what American universities have allowed themselves to become. Can you comment on that?
Well, they've just become factories for indoctrination of a leftist viewpoint of the new morality, that cultural, the relative, moral relativism where anything goes. And that's not the way universities were started. Most of the universities and colleges, you know, in the U.S. started off as Christian universities, and they've lost a sense of the mission of being a marketplace of ideas. And so ideally, you know, you'd have young people, they would go to college, they would get exposed, you know, to different worldviews, but it wouldn't be that they would have to reject their own values and principles to fit in or to get a decent grade, that they would have to parrot what the teachers are indoctrinating them with.
So how do we have a sense of hope when you're
I mean, I think there's always hope. And whenever there's light, you know, it dispels the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe information is power. Whether it comes to the agenda of the political left to destroy, I believe, our president and the people who elected him. And many of those people are just a solid Christian. I voted for President Trump, and I see, you know, this agenda that seems to be involved the political left not accepting the results of the election. I think as Christians, we need to stand up, you know, to those forces and not be so fearful of men. We need to take back our churches. Our churches have been infiltrated by leftists using Saul Alinsky strategies.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that among our young people, there are many of them, you know, who are aware, who are willing to fight for traditional Judeo-Christian values. We can help them by making sure that we instill in them not just the biblical values and principles, but also exposure in safe environments to worldviews, other worldviews, to the secular agenda, so that they are equipped to defend themselves when the parents are not around. We also need to realize, too, with the smartphones and all of the technology, that once the kid leaves home, they have the ability to access all kinds of material that that's negative, that would destroy their morals. And so they really have to be taught and they need instilled in them a sense of awareness that when they have that freedom and liberty, they don't abuse it.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Carol Swain, thank you so much for being on the show. A dozen red and a dozen yellow roses are on its way.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. Have a great day.
Bye.
All right. 5 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and then wrap up the show.
This is your daily dose of devotion. We buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
Thanks to your generous ongoing support, God is moving mightily through the programs on Faith Radio. Rob called us and shared his experience.
You have no idea how you are touching hearts with your program and encouraging others, loving others, bringing healing and wisdom and needed understanding to the souls of many. So many of us are deeply thankful to the Lord for how he's using you.
Share your Faith Radio experience by calling the Faith Line at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-93-FAITH.
If you're new to Faith Radio and you want to get a welcome packet, go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and you can request the free welcome packet, and we'll get it on its way there. And if you also want to add our app to your smartphone or your iPad, you can do that as well. You can download the Faith Radio app whenever you want to listen. If you have it on your phone, you just kind of open the app and boom, it starts playing instantly. And so if you can listen to live stream, you can access the shows that you missed. You can get all the podcasts of all the previous shows or segments you might want to pass on to a friend or listen to again. You can read the newest articles and discover lots of opportunities to connect. And that is available in the Apple App Store and Google Play. So I want to thank my guests who are on the show today. Dr. Peter Kapsner did a great job being with us. And Kim Cotola, as always, you can go to her website as well. CradleMyHeartRadio.org. And Drew Trotter was fascinating. We're going to get him back to talk about movies and how to watch a movie in an upcoming show in the future. And then Dr. Carol Swain, her story on PragerU is really worth seeing. Check it out. Be back tomorrow. See ya. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show. Connecting.